feel like having the innkeeper on and not getting to talk about land fears is cruel to him.
Well, we can't. Well,
she existed in the Age of Legends.
She did.
Yeah, we can talk about her.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how much content we end up creating there.
It's kind of like your adaptations, Matt. You plan to get up to one part, but you might not get there.
You never do. We never do. We never ever do. That's for sure. I think there's a lot to cover before then. Yeah, I guess just play it by ear, see how far we get. I mean, I'm sure I'll throw in some pot shot about Lanfear at the very end if we don't get there.
That's fine. You're allowed to bring her up.
Yes.
I'll allow it.
What are we talking about? No, just kidding. I know what we're talking about.
Just whatever, you know.
I studied for this. What am I talking about?
You're going to ace this one, Matt. Don't worry.
Yes. Excellent. That's mean, Dean. That's funny. I do have...
Don't worry. Dean, it's not his server, Dean, so you don't have to worry.
Yeah. I'm just a kid everywhere else.
All right, so let's go. It's 9:05. We got a nice crowd here, so let's get started here. Welcome to Talk Around Riyadh, the Wheel of Time showcast. I am your host, Joe Perry, here with my co-host, Jen Isgro. How you doing tonight, Jen?
I'm good, Joe. Very excited about tonight.
Me too. And how about our other co-host, Tom Kokoza? How you doing tonight, Tom?
I'm pumped. I am pumped to be here, Joe.
You sound it. And we have a guest tonight, a special guest, the Matt Hatch from the Dusty Wheel. How are you doing tonight, Matt?
Awesome. Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Thanks for coming on. We were looking forward to it. I've been very lazy with like getting guests on the show, but I've kind of kicked it into gear now. So
that's right. I'm here to help.
Good. Yeah. We need your expertise in this area too. So this works out perfect. Exactly. So we've got some news to talk about. Then we're going to get into the main topic, which we're going to talk about the Age of Legends. We're going to touch a little bit on the first age. And then at the end of the episode, we have a special announcement about next week's episode. So you'll have to listen to the very end to get that announcement. So there you go.
I'm going to stick around to hear it. I'm going to stick around.
I hope you do.
Hope so.
Sweet.
10 minutes in. I'm out, guys.
All right. So I should probably give you a chance, Matt, to talk a little bit about the Dusty Wheel, assuming that not everyone who listens to this podcast knows who you are, but I'm sure they do. But go ahead, Matt. Tell us about the Dusty Wheel.
Sure. Name's Matt Hatch. I am known as the Innkeeper Hatch at the Dusty Wheel. It's a live call-in talk show that we run on YouTube. And the Dusty Wheel comes from Towers of Midnight, for anyone here that has not read that book. I won't spoil it other than the name. It's the name of an inn that's often called the Rumor Wheel, and it's where people hang out to talk about rumors, theories, news, and, you know, pretty much it just attracts everyone from your lowest in society to your highest, and it's just a fun place to hang out. So that is the Dusty Wheel, but it's now here with us in the First Age.
Yes. How did you become the innkeeper at the Dusty Wheel, Matt?
So I'll try to make that story as short as possible.
Okay.
So here it goes. I created Theoryland 20 some odd years ago, Theoryland of the Wheel of Time. And because of that, and because of its eventual notoriety, Brandon Sanderson learned about it, along with that of other websites out there, like Dragon Mount and such, and asked a few of us to become beta readers for the final couple of books. And because of the work that we did in the beta read and the help that we provided, Brandon was kind enough, I think, to include us in the books as innkeepers. So Jason Denzel of Dragon Mount is an innkeeper. I'm an innkeeper. Linda Taglieri and others are innkeepers in the actual books themselves. So yes, Innkeeper Hatch in Towers of Midnight, chapter 31 of Into the Void is me, which is just a strange, strange, amazing, amazing, strange, strange thing.
That's got to be, I know you're not big into rereads, but I imagine when you read it there, it must have been a pretty surreal experience.
It's surreal. It feels like it's breaking the fourth wall. I feel like people see the word hatch and they're like, what? But everyone that reads it, no one's like, I didn't notice that. I was talking about Matchroom was in that chapter and he does something really cool in that chapter. So I didn't really care about the innkeeper that it mentioned 2 seconds. But yeah, the whole inn, the Dusty Wheel, is actually fashioned around Theoryland and the way that Brandon thought about Theorylanders and Theoryland itself. So I like to say it's certainly not just me. My wife's in there. And then Theorylanders in general are there, along with kind of the atmosphere of Theoryland that basically becomes the atmosphere of the Dusty Wheel in.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So, all right. So let's get into the news. We do have a little bit of news to talk about. So I'll get right into it because we've got a lot to talk about after the news. So WattSeries.com posted on their website the stunt team that's working on the Wheel of Time show. They're called Stunt Team Filmka Czech Republic. So it's a Czech-based stunt team company that's over 100 members, worked on over 470 film and TV productions. According to their website, they have stunt coordinators, stunt men, stunt and precision drivers, fencers, martial arts specialists, scuba divers, horseback riders, trained horses, and stunt rigging. And they've actually been working on Carnival Row, so they have that connection to Amazon as well. And they also are providing the horses for the show. So hashtag horse news.
Hashtag horse news. Yes. I was going to say. Very excited.
So do you guys have any comments, any thoughts on this? I mean, this is not, I guess this isn't like a new, it's new news, but you know, obviously they've been working on the show for a while. And I think somebody posted the one of those old pictures of, I think it was Madeline Madden with Bella, and it had the name Archie there, and in the corner it said like Filmka Czech Republic on it. So,
well, I just I love the fan made photoshopped image of Lan and Moraine. At first, yes. I saw that, and it did actually catch me off guard. I had forgotten that it was fan made, and so I stared at it for a long time, saying, is that really what they look like in the show? And I had to remind it, it is a fan-made photoshopped image of them. If you haven't seen it, it's worth going to look at on WattSeries.com.
Yes. Sure. That is really bold, I think, of them, right? To just pull a piece of fan art off and use it as the image for the TV show.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not like none of us have ever just taken random fan art and made it look official.
That's true. Every week.
Every week, exactly.
Oh boy. Tom, Jen, you guys have any thoughts on this?
No, it's good to know they have a stunt team working on the show. But other than that, I'm just excited about the show in general. Don't have any particular feelings about this particular stunt team.
Yeah, I know, right? It's like, oh, it's not.
The one that jumped out of when they were listing all the stuff that they do was scuba. And I'm wondering if that is going to come into play somehow, if there's going to be some kind of like, I don't know, if they're going to be doing stunt work maybe on the river when they escape Shadow Logoth or something like that, or whether they're just saying, hey, we do all this stuff. So if you also need stunt workers that can do scuba gear, you know, scuba things, we can do that too.
Maybe you're going to see a person drowning very slowly under the water.
Possible.
Yeah, what's our spoiler rule here, by the way? Oh, there's full spoilers?
Spoilers.
Oh, full spoilers, Matt. Full spoilers.
Sweet. Joe has on occasion just directly said, like, this is how the book ends. So, like, there's no, it's, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, when we get really deep, we try to, like, you know, Tom usually is more better than I am about it. Tom will say, spoiler alert, you know, Eggman dies.
Tom tries to be very vague, and then Joe just flat out says what Tom was trying to be vague about.
Yeah, Geekery pointed out that they did have some people in, some scuba people in Slovenia, is that how you pronounce
yeah,
it?
Yeah, so that's right, because any scenes that take place in the water, they're going to have, I guess, a scuba team be like a safety team.
It's true.
So, yeah, so they're going to, I mean, while you probably won't see scuba divers in the show.
That would be weird. An interesting change.
Yes, they will be there to be like a safety crew.
Brandon did not agree with that change.
Yes, that
was that's very divisive.
That's cool. Yeah, that was it. The scuba scene.
That was
the scuba across the Tarn. They're scuba diving across.
That is true, right? He was standing in front of the Tarn ferry scene, so that might have been it. Maybe a scuba team comes and rescues Master Hightower.
Maybe you see some scuba gear hanging in, like somebody found an old relic of the First Age, and it's just like a scuba. It's a scuba tank.
Yes. Oh, like one of those old school scuba masks, like those big rat, like from like, you know, 20,000 yeah. Leagues Under the Sea type masks.
Like a fishbowl. Exactly.
Yes.
Oh, gosh. That would be, by the way, all of us would love it if that was the divisive thing Brandon was talking about.
Yes. No, I don't think we'd be upset about that.
I don't think they'd be that lucky.
Yeah. That'd be so outrageous. It would just be like, oh, okay. That's not so bad. Okay. So next we have a casting, everybody.
Ooh.
Exciting. It's not really too exciting of a casting, but we have our Days Kongar. So this was Narg who found this one. He posted on his Reddit account, the Daily Trolloc Reddit account, Mandy Simmons will be playing Days Kongar. So for those of you who don't know who Mandy Simmons is, she's it looks like she's been in the television game for quite a long time. I don't recognize really anything she's been in. Jen, I know you said you've seen her in something.
I didn't see her in something. She voiced a character on Jungle Junction, which was a Disney Channel cartoon from about 10 years ago that my daughter used to watch. And I YouTubed a clip of her. She was actually pretty funny. So I think she's probably going to be good from that. But I haven't seen her physically act in anything.
She has the look of Daze Conger.
I have to make a comment on this. It's Conger? I thought it was Conger.
Yeah, I think it's Conger. Joe's like really hitting being that really second syllable.
I'm sorry.
By the way, I'm just loving all the comments. Like,
Chelsea, I know.
isn't she the twin sister of Confused Conger? Oh, gosh. It's good. It's so much more fun to be a guest.
Yes.
So I don't have a pronunciation on Daze Conger, but maybe we can pull one up. Maybe somebody in Discord will be kind enough to pull one up. I say Daze Conger.
I always said Daisy just because my brain is like Daze would be weird, but I'm sure it isn't. I'm sure I do not say things properly or correct in the books.
No, you're right. It looks like Daisy, but I would say Daisy too initially. But right, isn't it Else Grinwell? Like it's not Elsie. I used to say Elsie Grinwell or Elsa Grinwell, but it's just Else Grinwell. So I assume Daze followed that same kind of.
I thought it was Daze, but I said Conger, not Conga.
Look, I'm not questioning your pronunciation because. I'm terrible at it.
So what do you guys think? You've seen the picture. I don't know if any of you have seen her in anything, but she definitely has the look of Daze Conger.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I'm not familiar with the actress, but or Jungle Junction, but she's got the look
good
down.
She does have blue eyes, though, which is uncharacteristic for Two Rivers. So,
oh, man.
I don't know.
Maybe the context.
I did see the blue eyes, and I was like, "Is this someone's going to bring this up for sure?"
It's always me.
We were, I need to go watch the interview.
Yeah, last week when we were talking about Leandrin, we were talking about how Kate Fleetwood does not match any characteristic as Leandrin was described in the book. So, But that's okay. So, all right. So, and then we've gotten a request to talk about. So, Barney Harris created a new Instagram account, I guess. He does. I guess, I don't know. We don't know if his old one was an official one, but he created a new Instagram account. He posted some pictures on it. So go check that out. Go follow him. Some of the pictures are things that we've seen already, but he did post some other cool pictures of him with some of the cast, with Marcus and Madeline and Zoe, with Yosha. I almost said Joshua. There's a real kind of funny one of, it looks like Yosha's riding an ATV and Barney's straddling him facing backwards and looking into his eyes kind of lovingly. So,
yeah, it looks like Yosha's trying to pretend he's Captain America riding a motorcycle and Barney's not having any of it.
It reminds me of that scene in the, is it The Getaway? What's the one with Charlie Sheen and what's her
Chase.
Face?
Oh,
the Chase.
Yeah, yeah.
The Chase.
Why have we all seen that movie?
Christy Swanson.
Christy so Swanson bad. Is the reason I've seen that movie.
Yes, that is the reason why I've seen that all movie.
Right. Flea is in that movie.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Flea is
Henry Rollins. It's a big cast
good
there.
Movie.
Oh, yeah. And there is a picture of Marcus giving the finger. I did see this one. Okay. So if you want to go follow Barney Harris, go check him out on Instagram. It's Barney Harris _ is his official Instagram account. At least that's what we think is his official Instagram account. So that's our news for the day. So now that we're done with that crap. Let's get into the meat and potatoes of this. So we're gonna go into. So we're starting a multi-part series on history, and you know we said let's start with the Age of Legends, and then when we got Matt to come on, agree to come on the show, he said, "Well, what about the First Age? Are we gonna talk anything about the First Age?" And I said, "Okay, let's talk a little First Age." So let's get into it. First Age. So I'm just gonna throw out some what we know or what I think we know about it, because there's not really much information that we have, right? We have, most people agree that it is our age, the age that we currently live in here. And some of the references that lead us to believe that are in the Eye of the World, Tom's references to Len who flew to the moon in the belly of an eagle made of fire. I think Robert Jordan confirmed that it's John Glenn and Salia, his daughter who walked among the stars, is Sally Ride. Mosk and Merk, who is supposed to be Moscow in America, who fought with huge spears of flame, intercontinental missiles. We've got Queen Elsbeth, Queen of All, who is a reference to Elizabeth. And then Matarese, the healer, mother of wondrous Ind, That one's really obvious. Mother's Teresa. So did you guys, I'm going to be honest with you. When I first read the Eye of the World, I did not pick up on any of these.
I probably didn't either.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't think I did either.
Like, but this is,
I mean, that's one of those things you just skip by, you know, at the beginning.
Yeah.
Does he say that this is from the first age when he's saying that?
No. Yeah, he's just telling ancient tales. And like the only reason I picked up on it is because I think they're all like lumped together in like one paragraph. Mm-hmm. So like, and like Joe said, the Mother Teresa one is like it was like, in case you don't get it, let me get one that's a little heavy handed. In case you don't understand what I'm doing right now. There are some other things, Joe, that in later books, I think, that also give indication that if we are not the first age, then the first age is eerily similar to a world that we're living in. Right in Tanchico, there's a Mercedes-Benz symbol that they have as some ancient artifact.
In the Panarch's Palace, that's right, the strange symbol that represents hubris.
Right.
And then there's also a frieze in the Panarch's Palace that depicts what appears to be a giraffe.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious. I mean, I know we have a lot of wanted to say maybe it's a prior to that. And there is some room for this in the sense of Robert Jordan says, like, this is a third age as they think about the third age now. And people have kind of said, well, maybe this isn't the third actual age. Maybe this is just the way they think about it, but it's the fifth age. But in reality, the first age is clearly our age. Like that, I don't think there's not a lot of room to try to push outside of that bounds. It seems pretty obvious from, like you said, Robert Jordan's answers to questions. So mm-hmm. Definitely feels very first agey. The part we don't really know is how it ends. That's the interesting part.
Well, I have another question too. So, right, wasn't channeling was supposedly then discovered in the first age?
Yeah, it just depends on how you interpret it. But it was the discovery of it was at the end of the first age, or you would say the discovery of it was the first, you know, it was the thing that kicked off the second age. So, but yes, it's either it just depends again how you want to think about it. But yes, end of the first age, first beginning of the second age.
So does anyone have any theories on how they think the first age ended?
So I'm going to ask this question again, because I think I asked you guys off the show, but not every age ends with a battle with the Dark One, right?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I don't think
so it could flow like the first age could just go into the second age, or there's some kind of event that creates the second age.
There typically is some type of apocalyptic event of some sort, at least from what we're told, at least what we've seen, at least at the end of the second age and end of the third age. The first age, I can't remember what we've heard in the books. I did take a look. I told Joe I would take a little look at RJ's notes that I have access to and see if there's anything in there that he talks about in the first age. And you have to understand that what I'm about to tell you is not canon, and maybe it's already in the books, but this is just kind of stuff that he wrote as like precursors to the actual things that he wrote in the book. So if this makes sense, there's lots of stuff that went along with this that is not in the books and is wrong. But he said, mankind claimed the stars in the sky as their own, and their arrogance grew so great, they were purged from the world by fire.
Huh.
So that's how he kind of wrote, that's what he was thinking. Now, whether or not that he held to that as his explanation for how the first age ended, that was kind of part of his thinking when it came to the end of a first age. Now, what does that mean? Again, it's going down that road of kind of speculating about non-canon ideas, but yeah, mm-hmm. Purged from the world by fire. You know, I guess you could go down the road and say maybe that had to do with the research they were looking into the One Power, you know, similar to the research they did at the end of the second age, you know, and maybe somehow it kicked off some apocalyptic, I don't know, destruction.
The discovery of the One Power, maybe some sort. Yeah, that makes sense. I could buy that.
It seems weird, though, because I feel like the second age is more advanced than our age in some ways, in like a lot of ways. So if we were like purged from the world by fire, then how did we advance past where we are now?
Well, actually, we're going to kind of get into that in the Age of Legends. So when we talk about the Age of Legends.
Okay, all right.
that's a great leading question, Jen, to get into the Age of Legends.
So one other thing, before we jump back to that, one thing that I kind of, just because with the references that we made earlier about the fact that Mosk and Merc like fought with Lances of Flame, not only is there an apocalyptic thing, but it seems to happen at the end of a millennium every once in a while. And like the third age has like basically every 1,000 years in the third age, something bad happens that like knocks society down again. So like, I was wondering whether he really thought that there was going to be like a nuclear war between Russia and America sometime before the year 2000. And like, that's what he was thinking was the end of that age. Although it doesn't really make sense with latter things. Cause like they kind of imply like portal stones are from the first age or like before the Age of Legends. And then there might be other things too, like that we definitely don't have around. But I wondered whether, at least when he was writing The Eye of the World, whether that was his thought about the end of the first age, some kind of nuclear holocaust.
Yeah, well, I mean, let me throw this out there. For sure, maybe we should say it this way. The first age in Robert Jordan's world is functionally constructed based on our world, right? But like you said, he's adding components to this as the structure of the wheel has set up the first age. So, you know, it has portal stones and the Horn of Valir comes from the first age. You know, there are other things that come here that come from this age that we don't have. Now, I guess you could say some of these things were created. And that is a possibility. We believe that the portal stones were created in the first age. Maybe they're created at the end of the first age. You know, they're created by those who knew the numbers of chaos. So maybe something in science led to the destruction that we're talking about after we get portal stones and after we get things like the Horn of Valir. So, you know, we don't know how much longer it went on from what we consider the first age. But I would hesitate to think that the end of the first age is anytime close to what we're experiencing now. I would say a lot still happens in Jordan's first age. That's my guess, at least.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, if we want to take it almost literally, right? Because there's a lot of things that we supposedly happened in the first age that haven't happened here, at least yet. But then, you know, there's the whole point. We were talking about this before we started about, our world is, the time is linear and Jordan's world time is a wheel. So there's that difference too. So
yeah. You have all those kind of pieces to it where you're like, so yeah, that's why I like to think of it structurally as that. And he's definitely adding in some pieces, right? Up to this like Glenn and space travel and stuff like that. So you get those pieces and you're like, well, is it really our world? And it is, but it's not, you know?
Yeah. All right. So let's get into the Age of Legends. So I'm going to start talking about some great foundational historical textbook kind of stuff, which I know everybody here likes. So,
so pick up a drink.
So grab exactly. A drink, take a swig. Here we go. So, right, the Age of Legend was also known as the Second Age. We just talked about the First Age. And it ended over 3,000 years prior to the beginning of the books. And there are very few fragments of records left over from which we can piece together some understanding of it. It was a time when men and women wielded the One Power side by side with no taint on Sidon. So this is pre-taint. Hashtag pre-taint, I guess now. It was a very prosperous age with no wars and all were at peace. Crime was virtually unknown and the people of this age had no interest in material wealth. People strove to serve the community for status and honor alone. So the land was also very different at this time. One example that they gave in the Big White Book was that Shiel Ghul was an island in a cool sea that people liked to visit.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome. There were huge cities such as Parandesin, Mjin, Comel, Maruar, and Adanza. Forgive me if I pronounced any of those wrong, which I'm sure I have. These were all considered technological jewels among lush greenery. And there was also a great research college called the Column Don, which had a magnificent floating sphere, which drew knowledge seekers from all over to discover new wonders of science and the One Power. So we've got this kind of meshing of the One Power and technology together, which is kind of really cool and interesting. I would definitely love to see some sort of like Age of Legends, either books or spinoffs. That would be great just to see that kind of magic and science together.
Let's do the first show and then we could do the Age of Legends spinoff. Exactly. like the Game of Thrones prequel spinoff that's coming out supposedly, right?
Yes, yeah. I guess we can do that, sure. So as I previously mentioned, that status and honor, which was gained through community service, took precedence over material wealth, and accomplishments were rewarded with a third name. So like Luz Theron Telamon, Elan Morin, Morin Tedroni, they all received third names through their status in community service. There was a worldwide council that governed everything, which was made up of democratically elected officials. And Aes Sedai were often elected to the council. There was no poverty. no extreme financial inequality or starvation. There was no motive for conflict. So things like entertainment were accessed directly in people's homes via three-dimensional imaging. This could be live or pre-recorded, a little bit similar to what we got, what we have here, only not three-dimensional yet, I guess. They did have view walls used for entertainment, and they also displayed two-dimensional images on those view walls. So that's kind of like a flat screen TV, I guess. It's similar to what we have here.
Exactly right.
Yeah. And then they had communication was done via call units that allowed 3D images of people or a logo. So every time I think of this, I think of The Infinite Jest. If anyone's read that book, there's like a whole chapter talking about video calling and how, you know, everyone thought it was so great when they discovered video calling and everyone wanted to do video calls. And then people started to realize that if you can see the other person talking to you and you can see them, that they can see all of the things that you normally do when you're on a phone call, like, let's say, not pay attention or watch TV or read something else while you're talking to them. In the book, people started creating, I guess, logos or images to show, and that looked like themselves. Also, people would get upset because they figured if they video called, they had to get dressed nice and put makeup on and look nice. So it eventually just kind of destroyed video calling, where everyone was just like, fuck this, I don't want to do this anymore because it's too much work.
It is a lot of work.
That's pretty much what this pandemic is showing us. Yeah. You know, if we're all going to be on Zoom every day, you know, for the next 10 years, in 10 years from now, we'll all just have like avatars that represent us.
Yes,
no one want to get dressed for their Zoom call.
Yeah, exactly. And it went, yeah, and you just go back to audio calls.
Yeah. One thing I found Jordan said about the Age of Legends and the One Power, I think is really helpful in this spot right here. He said, I said that the world had been previously powered by this technology. The technology of the age before the breaking of the world was based on the use of the One Power. Their machinery used the One Power. Their flying machines used the One Power. Their toasters used the One Power. The One Power was how they operated their society and their civilization. It's really just when it takes a little bit to kind of think that way, but everything to these people was powered by the One Power. And but I guess it's a little bit in a way, electricity in some form or fashion. But yeah, the One Power controlled everything for them.
I was just going to say, how did like a normal non-channeler though use things that were powered by the One Power? It just worked like that or?
Yeah, I think it was like almost think of like a One Power power plant.
Yeah,
that would power things, and people who didn't have, I guess, could use the One Power, I guess, tap into that.
Oh, I did see, actually have that in my notes, something called the Standing Flows. It says it was a power system to provide the One Power to everyone. Is that what it was?
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah, I actually don't have that in my notes, Jen. So
yeah, I get my notes from the wiki, so I'm never sure if they're correct or not. But that's why I want to like run them by everyone.
That was from the Big White Book. They did. And they built a lot of their what they said was they built a lot of their tech. Basically, the researchers, the Aes Sedai, would try to help engineer things that wouldn't require them to be there, right? Okay. They would engineer something that then could be fabricated and mass-produced that was still powered by the One Power. And then non-channelers could go ahead and create them and then also use them. By that thing, like you said, the standing flows, whatever that was, it somehow would send power out. I always think of it like the Tesla coils or something like that, like something that just gives everyone access to, you know, this thing that's powering everything. So, yeah, you can imagine once the One Power broke down from the society. I know we're not getting there, but yeah, you can kind of imagine what a change society would have gone through to lose that when you've come to depend on it.
Yeah. And I mean, I have a note here too. It says that the Aes Sedai mostly focused on design and creation of the tech, and then it was maintained by non-channeling technicians.
Yep.
Yeah. And one of the like benefits of this was there's virtually no pollution caused by any of this because it wasn't fossil fuels being burned or anything like that. So everything was run by the One Power. So there was no pollution.
Yeah. And Jordan did want to, he gave a caveat to this, to a piece of this, which he said, you still had outbreaks of diseases, although they were kept to a minimum, but you still had those kind of disasters. And he said evil still existed, right? Agenor, he said he was like this biological scientist. And he said, he's the kind of person that would say, I wonder what would happen if I took Ebola virus and altered it to be an airborne virus. He'd go ahead and do just that, all without realizing he'd be creating a potentially unstoppable plague. All Agenor would reply to that was, interesting. So in that way, we still had those kind of evils. It was it wasn't as prevalent, right? It wasn't as noticeable because the society had ways to deal with it or, you know, stop it. And most people weren't dealing with the other ills of society that are even more difficult, like poverty and those type of things.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we talked about it last week, Tom, right? About the oath rods. And we talked about how like they were used as binding rods back in the Age of Legends, right? And that's kind of how they would control crime if they were criminals.
Not criminals, because most criminals, they felt like they could rehabilitate George, you know, with their normal means. But people who were incapable of being rehabilitated, people who, you know, who their science and their medicine and their social services and whatever else couldn't touch, that were just incapable of stopping doing these bad things, they would use these binding rods and make it so that they couldn't. So if you were a mass murderer that they couldn't figure out what was psychologically or chemically or medically wrong with you, they would just make you swear on this binding rod to stop killing people. And that's what it was. It was like a cross between a punishment and like a last ditch effort, because there was no capital punishment. And my impression is that they really didn't have prisons in like the way that we do now. Society wasn't built to do that. It was built to solve those kinds of problems. So yeah, that's what an oath rod was used for, at least according to, you know, what I think Samael says it in the books. I'm not 100%. That's, you know, recall. And I haven't read those books in a little while, but I think he's the one who talks about what they use them for.
So Chansonnet is pointing out in Discord that the binders only worked on channelers, though. I never even thought about that, right? Is that true?
I don't know. That that's – well, I'll
you
look
need
that
to
up
channel,
while we're talking.
You need to channel to use them, but I don't know. I don't know if it's true.
I think the oath rod, like the oath rod that we know of in the tower, I think maybe you need to be a channeler, but I don't know if there are other – we know that there are other – like oath rods or binding rods that existed. So I don't know. I can't answer that. Matt's going to look that up. He'll get back to you.
Matt's our research team for today.
we have a research team the day off.
It is stated that they don't work on anything but channelers. I thought there was some, they had some capability of preventing others that were non-channelers, but I'll have to go back and look at that. Nice but that's catch. What the wiki tells us, at the very least.
Okay. So Aes Sedai in the Age of Legends. So although many people who earned a third name gained high status and honor, Aes Sedai were considered of the highest status and honor due to their ability to channel, of course. This provided them with the ability to offer the greatest service to the community. So while Aes Sedai were rare during the Age of Legends, they were not as rare in the Third Age. So the ability to channel is a recessive gene, was found in 2-3% of people in the Age of Legends. And I think we get in the Third Age, it's only about 1%. So I have a question for everyone here. Why do you think there's a lower percentage of channelers in the Third Age than the Age of Legends?
Is channeling at all a genetic?
Yeah, it is.
So if you're a channeler and you have a kid, they would be also be a channeler?
Well, they're more likely. It says Jordan said it's a recessive gene.
Which means you would have to have somebody else who had
the gene
as well.
Yeah.
Right?
Two people would have to have the gene.
Remember, you have the White Tower is female only, right? Yeah. And they're cloistered. So your biggest group of channelers, in Randland at least, is not around people who, you know, in general, who could carry the gene for channeling, and male channelers who, you know, go crazy and die. So like there's not a lot of opportunity for it to stay fresh in the genetic pool.
Yeah. It seems like channeling in the Second Age was, you know, obviously more prevalent, and the men and women, maybe it was like a more normal thing. So it seems like maybe the men and women would marry more and have kids more than they obviously would in the Third Age.
Yeah, and I guess it helps, right, that there's no taint on Sidene, so
you actually have men who could channel that would live to procreate.
Yeah, that makes sense. I figured as much. I thought I'd ask it though, but I wasn't sure if anyone had any different perspectives on that, but that makes sense.
Yes, it's definitely that for sure.
Just
the killing off of all of the male channelers or their own death, and then not actively breeding them, if you will. So
yeah. you would think that the Aes Sedai would have figured that out, that channeling is like genetic. I don't know, you think they would have figured that out and realized that, hey, we've got to start doing something about this, but I guess they didn't know. I don't know, they never talked about it, right?
would their goal really be to, you know, maximize the number of challengers? Maybe at some point, but they probably, that's probably down the road. That's more in line with what's happening to them now and how they feel like the White Tower is emptier than it's been before, but it was probably something so slow that, you know, it's how many channels. I mean, it's not like they were out testing the percentage of the total population, right? They didn't know this from a statistical standpoint in the Third Age. So it probably just wasn't clear to them exactly what was happening, and it probably happened really slow. And then they, now they're thinking about it, you know, at the end of the Third Age.
Well, I wonder too, like the other cultures like the Seafolk and the Aiel, I don't think we get any details on this though. I mean, is channeling more prevalent among them? Because I mean, I don't remember if we hear about like the Windfinders or the Wise Ones. I know the Wise Ones marry, so they're clearly having children. I'm not sure so much about the Windfinders as much. So I wonder if there's more of a prevalence of channelers among those cultures as opposed to, you know, the Westlands.
Well, I think it would all come down to what their impression was of male channelers. And since almost all of the cultures, other than what the Land of Mad Men, right, you're going to have different cultures that are going to have different rates. But I think what Jordan was trying to say was the average rate across the entire world is probably 1%, right? Mm-hmm. But some other cultures might be a higher percentage and lower just because of how they've handled it, or the number of people with a recessive gene that happens to be procreating.
I also read something, because they didn't swear on the oath rod in the Second Age, so people were even living longer. So the amount of people in the age at one time that could channel was more than even, you know, because people were just existing longer in that age.
Yeah, that makes sense too. Yeah, the life expectancy was much longer.
By the way, back to that comment on binding non-channelers, it was a thing, but I think the impression that you get from Samael in A Crown of Swords is that it was harder. So I don't know what the concept of it being a harder thing to do other than using the oath rods. So it sounds like it was a possible, but maybe not using particular oath rods or those oath rods. Maybe there was some other mechanism that they found to bind non-channelers. So
yeah. Well, aren't dark friends bound to the dark one? Do they use some sort of device for that?
I don't think every dark friend is bound in the way that you're suggesting. And I don't think we don't know the exact process. I don't think, I can't remember if we have any indication. I think Jordan mentioned that some are marked by the dark one, but how that comes to be, it sounds like a trip to Shale Goal or something.
Yeah. I feel like back to the number of channels. I feel like later on in the books, when, you know, we have the whole story of Perrin and the Shaito, that there's just like, don't they say there's like hundreds or thousands of Shaido Wise One channelers at one point?
Yeah, there's I think they say I thought they said like 1,000, but maybe it was hundreds. I can't remember exact, but yes, there's a lot.
Yeah, so I would assume just by that there's got to be a lot more Aiel channelers than there are Aes Sedai. So maybe it's not as, just because I guess the Wise Ones do marry and have children, that kind of boosts their numbers a little bit. Because, right, the men could carry the gene but not be channelers since it's a recessive gene. So,
yeah.
Yep. And they don't...
By the way... Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Matt.
No, I was going to say, it was just about channelers in the Age of Legends. It said that a lot of them that found out they could channel, they weren't required to study. They just decided not to. Imagine that when you find out you can channel, but you just don't choose to. That's how just overwhelming the tech was in the Age of Legends, that some were just like, not interested. I already have access to pretty much everything the One Power can do. Why would I need to learn it and go out and serve the community? I want to do something else. So you actually had learners, if you will, just decide, no thanks. I don't want to go through the training, and walk away from it, which today is like they kick you out, right? If you can't handle it.
I have a note here too, that there, you know, although there was a higher percentage of channelers, most were still fairly weak in the One Power. And there were only a few who were very powerful enough. And I guess like Forsaken level powerful, or Luzerne level powerful. And testing for the One Power was done regularly. It wasn't mandatory, but most people would do the testing. And I guess, like you said, Matt, not everyone necessarily would kind of go with it.
I don't know how deep we want to keep on going this genetic route, but the quote you just brought up was that there were a lot of them were just really kind of could not channel very much, right?
Yeah.
The idea, and so the question is, because this has come up before in other discussions, how much of your ability to channel a certain amount of the one power depends upon your genes, your physical genes, and how much of it is determined by your soul. Yeah. And I know there's some controversy about this, you know, whether or not a soul always has the same access, the same capability, no matter which body it's placed in, which isn't true. Actually, we know that if your body doesn't have the ability to channel, you can't channel whether or not your soul does. But if you're put in a body that could channel, does that body determine the total amount that you can, or is it soul determined? And so the reason why I bring this up is if there were so many people genetically where they were kind of procreating and they had, you know, maybe more gaze level capability of channeling one power, and they're procreating with someone similar to that, you know, does that child also have, you know, a diminished amount, you know, in other words, is that passed on also?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's weird, right? You, I guess if we want to keep going down this rabbit hole. But,
let's go.
Let's
go.
So we've got Nynaeve and Egwene, right? Mm-hmm. Neither of their parents are channelers. We've never heard of anybody, you know, in their family ever channeling. So then how do you get all these non-channelers and all of a sudden get like one of the most powerful channelers alive?
Aren't Nynaeve's parents dead?
They are dead.
So yes. You don't know if they could channel. Maybe her father died of channeling sickness.
Yeah, they don't. Do they say how her parents die? I don't think they do, right?
Yeah, I don't think so. I would say, you know, my first instinct is that the channeling strength is tied to the soul. But then you see things that happen in the books that I think contradict that, right? If the channeling strength was tied to the soul, would Sindade not have the same strength as Lanfear did?
Oh, that's true. When they all get,
or you say maybe she would, except for really the fact that the elfin, I don't remember which ones. I apologize.
Yeah,
sucked it out of her. I don't know, right? So it's tough. It's tough. My instinct is that the soul determines your channeling strength, and your body determines whether you can tap into that or not.
Well, but, I mean, look at Matt, you brought up Morghese, and then look at Elaine. So it would kind of leave me, I think you're right. I think it'd be more of a soul thing because Morghese and Elaine are very different in their channeling capabilities.
Yeah. So the question then becomes, was the wheel just throwing out in the Age of Legends? Maybe there just are just a few really powerful souls and the rest are just kind of mediocre because like you said, that's the point that was made in the Age of Legends was so many had such a small ability with the power.
Yeah. You mentioned before, and I'm going to, you know, lead back in with this, that a lot of them who channeled worked in professions that had nothing to do with the one power. So there were lots of Aes Sedai who did that, as you said. But there were certain ones that were dominated by Aes Sedai, such as healing, of course. And they were called restorers. Mining, which is an interesting one. So this was done by Aes Sedai strong in the earth who could create new alloys. And I thought this was really cool and interesting because we really don't see anything of this at all in the Third Age in the books. Like we know Egwene is strong in earth, but that's all. Like they can make Quendayar and that's about it. There's no talk about
in the Great Hunt, don't they have her looking for like iron ore? The Shanshan have her looking for iron ore or something in the earth when they have her as a Damani?
They do. We don't hear anything about like new alloys though. I'm sorry, the geeky scientific portions of it. Yeah, so I'm kind of curious as to what those kind of alloys were back then, like these made, you know, fictional metals that they were able to create.
What's the one from Avatar?
Adamantine.
What's the one from Avatar that they're looking for? It's like the worst name.
Unobtainium. The worst. I imagine whatever Whitebridge is made out of, right, is probably one of those things.
Is Whitebridge made out of a metal? I thought it was a stone.
Isn't it that Whitebridge? Maybe I'm misremembering it. What's the one that's like looks like it's made out of like glass?
Yeah, I think Whitebridge looks has that look.
Right.
I don't know that we know what the material is.
Oh, okay. So that's right. Oh, there you go. That could be one of those alloys. There you go.
You know, it's funny what they focused on, right? And I think that's what the Forsaken talk about later on is, you know, they didn't think about doing some things that they see those in the Third Age doing. Because it probably just wasn't necessary. It wasn't something that they considered or, you know, that wasn't where their skill sets were at, you know, and what they had been trained to do. And like you said, we don't have any in the Third Age that are really trained to pull out, you know, to mine with the one power. That's just not a that's not where the Aes Sedai spend their time, right? The I was just going to say, I guess,
obviously, right, because men are typically stronger in Urs too, so that probably has something to do with it as well, right? Because women strong in Urs is very rare, so they wouldn't be seeking those kinds of things.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Also, they worked in farming, which is interesting. So they worked in tandem with Ogier or Ogur, or what is it? Ogier?
Ogier?
Ogier. I'll get it right one day. Nim and Dashain Aiel. And they worked as a team to focus the one power for perfect growth. They refer to a thing called seed singing, which I imagine is something like tree singing, only instead of with a tree, you do it to a seed.
Sounds
yeah.
right.
So, yeah. And then there was tech research, as we talked about before. There was entire branches devoted to the use of the One Power, living constructs made by the One Power, and Chora trees apparently were also, I guess that was part of the tech. They lined the streets of the cities, and apparently Nim. So yeah, I don't know, were the Nim living constructs?
Yeah, they were sentient. They were sentient constructs. Yep.
Okay, created by the One Power.
Yeah, they also had... They had souls, but those souls, Jordan said, were borrowed from basically the pool of souls. In other words, they were not Nim specific souls, and so it kind of makes you wonder: was it just like George? You know what I mean?
Right. That's a little creepy.
The wheel just grabs some random soul. Like, you're going to be a Nim this age, you know, or in this turning or this part of the age. Yeah, they borrowed souls is what Jordan called it. So.
I wonder if it was like kind of like the Hindu religion, where like if you lived a good life, you got to come back as a Nim or something like that.
I think I'm pretty sure the wheel's just like, whatever. I just need somebody in there to grow some stuff, you know. But yeah, it's an interesting concept. Jordan, I feel like you made up some of the stuff on the fly when people would ask him these questions. Because he'd say stuff like, let's just say it's kind of like a borrowed soul. How does that sound? Okay, cool.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I'm sure he had to do stuff like that. And then afterwards had to write it down and be like, okay, yeah. Let's put this in the books. And they also, the Aes Sedai would also create obviously Angreal, Sa'angreal, and Tir Angreal. So those were the main areas that they that were dominated by Aes Sedai. So they did have the Aes Sedai did have a loose structure. As I mentioned before, they were highly influential and powerful. There was the Hall of Servants, which was kind of like the core guild, which controlled and regulated who could channel. It was located in the city of Parandesin, and they handled regulation and enforcement of the laws, rules, and punishments for the Aes Sedai. And the head of the Aes Sedai was called the First Among Servants, which is very reminiscent, I think, of like a Republic Rome to me. That's what it reminds me of, like first man in Rome, or the first, what is it? The Princeps Senatus was like the first man in the Senate. And they had branches of Aes Sedai organizations in every town and village, and anywhere there were Aes Sedai, there was like a branch of Aes Sedai government. And then obviously we know like towards the end, and I don't know how long Luz Theron was the first among servants towards the end there, until it all went south.
Yeah, they about the Ajahs, it was like they called it lowercase Aja, and it was described as a vast sea of constantly shrinking, growing, dividing, combining, melting groups of people to be reborn in some new guise and begin the process once more. I think the idea being that, yeah, there wasn't this fixed, you know, green, blue, whatever, you do this. It was just like this, you can almost imagine like going over to like a couple of Aes Sedai and saying like, hey, we're going to focus on, it's like, it almost sounds like research groups, you know? And they were loosely, you know, formed, and then they would dissolve and create new ones. And it didn't become like a capital A Aja until the Third Age, which is more defined in the White Tower and how things turned out there. So it's kind of interesting.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Do we know sorry, go ahead, finish.
Go ahead, Jen.
No, finish and I'll, it's a different thought.
No, go ahead. I was going to ask a question too, so.
Do we know how old Luz Theron was at the end of the Second Age?
I don't think
the exact age. I don't think we know his exact age. Definitely, I would imagine hundreds of years old. He said in A Memory of Light, he said, it did. It was just Rand, but obviously talking from Luz Theron's memory. He said, I can't decide if I would have changed things, though. There were many good years, good decades, good centuries. Oh, we believed we were living in paradise. Perhaps that was our downfall. We wanted our lives to be perfect, so we ignored imperfections. Problems were magnified through inattention, and war might have become inevitable if the boar hadn't ever been made. So it sounds like he was around for centuries, and that there were definitely institutional problems that were already showing up in how they were living, regardless if the boar ever came to be. Now, obviously, the boar sped things up and made things worse, much worse, quicker. But
I'm just curious if you read that or if you had that quote memorized.
I read that. There's no way. Okay. I don't memorize any of this stuff.
You should really lie. Good. Matt, you're supposed to lie and say, I have that memorized.
No one
could call you on that.
No. I don't want really? Anyone ever thinking I memorize this stuff. It does not happen. Okay. I remember ideas. It's like those people that quote movies. I can't quote movies. I'm always like, when that guy went to the store and then they held it up and there were people there and then they ran out. And then my friend will be like, oh, you mean when he said this? And I have no idea how people do that. I can't do that.
You just have to watch the movie 100 times.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So Da, Shane, Aiel, let's get a little bit into them. So they existed during the Age of Legends. So that's why we're talking about them. So they were pledged to serve the Aes Sedai. It was suspected that each Aes Sedai had at least one Da, Shane, Aiel servant. And I think we get some hints in the books that it was something of like a family thing. So maybe it was like not necessarily one, but maybe a family of Da, Shane, Aiel served an Aes Sedai, or it was if like one Da, Shane, Aiel died, the family member would pick up that's I don't want to say servitude because that sounds negative, but they would serve the Aes Sedai. They were bound to the Way of the Leaf, which was a no violence, only pacifism rule. We get that later on in the books with the Tinkers, we learned. And their song could enhance channeling. So yeah, that never comes to fruition though in the Third Age, right? We never get a song enhancing channeling at all, right? I'm trying to think of like—
The song is lost.
The song is lost, right? We never find it.
The song is. There's no actual song, right? That's the canon is there's no real song. It's just like it's an idea of this. I think it's coming from this thing, the experience that they all had of the Da, Shane, Aiel singing and having this talent or whatever. But yeah, I don't think we ever see it. I don't think we ever see that in Third Age.
We know Ogier can sing to enhance like growth of plant life, but we don't get any enhanced channeling from singing. Yeah. So as we get later on into the Age of Legends, most of the things that from the Age of Legends are gone. So there's not much information in the Third Age about it. Things that are left over, some legacies from the Age of Legends, right? The city of Rudian or Rudian or however you want to pronounce it, where the last surviving char tree was planted and that still stands. So that's a remnant of the Age of Legends. We've got the Sangreal, the Choden Kal, which also dates back to the Age of Legends. I'm not sure. I can't think of anything else off the top of my head that we see in the Third Age that are remnants from the Age of Legends. I don't know if anyone else here can think of anything specific.
Well, the Horn of Valir isn't a remnant of the Second Age, but Maria Simmons, one of the Team Jordan, worked with Robert Jordan, said that the Old Tongue inscription was added to it in the Age of Legends. So the remnant of the Age of Legends of the Horn of Valir is the inscription that was put on it.
Right. And in the Age of Legends, they spoke the Old Tongue. The Old Tongue, I guess, is a remnant of the Age of Legends, right? Because that's what they spoke.
Yeah, you could say that. Yep.
Yeah.
What about the someone in chat saying the doorways? I don't know if that's true or not.
Oh, the twisted stone doorways. I guess there's I'm sure there's a lot of Tir Angreal and Sangreal, right? We don't get any creation that at least we know of that I can think of. Is there any creation of Sangreal and Angreal and Tir Angreal in the Third Age prior to like, when, the
story takes place?
Well, when Elaine starts making them, right? Is it Elaine? Elaine's the one who can make them, right? Yeah.
It just depends on, we don't know how much creation of Tir Angreal went on in Roydian, right? We don't know what they were doing there and how long they might've been building things or creating things, or if they brought everything there. But it seems to me that they probably created more when they got there. So, but nothing that I guess later on, right? They take them all out and maybe some of those things were made technically in the Third Age maybe they all just came from the Second Age and the breaking. So yeah, I think that part's unclear.
If at the very least they were made, a lot of them were made at the very beginning of the Third Age.
Well, I mean, I guess technically we do have the Adam. Are technically created by the Seanchan. So
that's right. That's right. I wonder if was the first Adam created in the Third Age, or was it something from the Age of Legends?
Yeah, it was created in the Third Age.
Okay.
Was Manetherin in the Second Age or the Third Age?
Third Age. That was the Trolloc Wars.
Okay. But they spoke the Old Tongue at that time, too. No?
Well, they definitely did speak the Old Tongue. Was that like the common language that they spoke? I'm not sure. We'll get to that in our to that point.
Jumping ahead.
I was going to say one of the most fascinating things about the Tarangreal and Sangreal and Angreal was that Jordan talks about them being mass produced, right? Like even Kalendor was a mass produced Sangreal, right? It wasn't like this singular thing that was ever created. And so that's what often it's like, they just made one of these and you're like, no, they probably made millions of certain Tarangreal, you know?
So there were more than one Kalendors?
There was, but they didn't survive.
Huh. I never thought about that there could be multiple of the same type. I mean, I guess, right. Cause then they start fabricating the stone rings, right? Later on the Dream Tarangreals, they start fabricating more of those. So I guess it makes sense that they could do that with anyone. I always kind of thought of the, like Kalendor and the Chodan Kahl and like as one of a kind.
Well, he talked about the Kalendor has a manufacturing flaw and he talks about mass producing Sangreal. So did he say 100%? Can I tell you that he said that there were 700 Kalendors? No. but he does say that they mass produced Sangreal. So they did mass produce extremely powerful, you know, devices, whether or not you want to say it was Kalendor or others. They weren't just singular always. There were obviously specific ones that were singular, but I don't think we have any reason to believe that. It doesn't say it was the only one ever, but we don't have two to say that there were more than one.
Huh. So now that we're on Kalendor, you made me think of something. So, right, Kalendor, spoiler alert, is also a true power Sangreal. And that means it couldn't have been created. If it was created, it had to be created at the end of the Age of Legends, because the true power didn't exist, but nobody knew what the true power was. So unless they accidentally created a Sangreal that could be used for a power that they had no knowledge of, it would have had to have been created right towards the end of the Age of Legends or shortly after.
Well, no, he said it was a manufacturing flaw that enabled it to be that case. So if you think about channeling, right, they still channel the true power through them, like basically through the same route that you might channel the one power through. So, you know, however Kalendor is able to increase the power, you know, the same mechanism with through some flaw enabled it to do the same for the true power. So I don't think that had to have been someone with any knowledge because it was just called a flaw in manufacturing. Just think of all the flawed things you get, you know, all the socks and shirts that they just sell or give away because they had some flaw in manufacturing. It's kind of like that.
But the devil doesn't exploit the flaw in a pair of socks though.
Exactly.
Or does he?
I thought that was the what is that? The underpants gnomes, right?
Yeah.
Oh man. Okay. Yeah, so did cool. I? Yeah.
Sock Sangreal. You know.
Sock Sangreal.
I think that's possible. Why couldn't they have made socks that were Sangreal? That would be really efficient.
that warm, right? They warmed your feet, right? That's there you go.
Exactly.
They used them for long distance runners. Used them to
exactly. Yes. That's great.
Or kept your feet feeling fresh, things like that. Yeah, I'm sure that's what. Right when you get to a point of like you're in such like a paradise type world, this is the things that you get because everything there's nothing bad in the world. So you start fixing little minor things like cold feet and smelly feet. So
exactly. So Tarangreal socks, I like it. They definitely had those. I see no reason. That's what Rand with Luz Theron's memory set was saying was we just started doing everything with the one power. So basically just think about everything you do in life and then add the one power to it. And that's kind of the world that the Age of Legends existed in.
Yeah. Yeah. I imagine kind of like I always kind of picture like Hogwarts where like just everything's magical and done with magic within Hogwarts.
Yeah. So yeah. I think that's a reasonable analogy.
Only more like sci-fi. But
by the way, I know this question has come up before, genetic reconstruction with the One Power. And Robert Jordan said, maybe in the Age of Legends, someone might have been able to pull it off if they were really skilled. Might have. And then the guy asked, like Agenor? And he said, Agenor was damn good, but he wasn't that good. So, which is so funny, is like, it seems like Jordan always talks about these people like they were real and like he knew exactly what they were capable of from their skill set. He's like, no way, Agenor could never have done genetic reconstruction to make somebody taller, you know, for example.
Okay, I was going to ask you what you meant by genetic reconstruction. So almost like gene splicing and gene editing and...
Creating, making somebody taller, changing their, you know, changing what they look like. I think this was in regards to Samael. I think someone was asking a question about that. And yeah, he said maybe in the Age of Legends, but not Agenor, apparently.
Huh.
He knew his limits.
He knew his limits. Exactly.
So there's one thing I want to touch on. And Matt, you touched on it with the quote you had memorized that you didn't read at all. But one thing I think is interesting is that like there is this image of the Age of Legends as a paradise, but you know, Rand, you know, reflecting back on Luthien's memory, says like, that may have been a fool's paradise, that there was still, with all of this advanced technology, of all this advanced use of the power, with all of their medicine, all of their social skills, there were still underlying, like, significant flaws in society that would have led eventually to its downfall one way or the other, at least, you know, in his opinion. And I think that's interesting because, like, and we talked about this a little bit when we talked about Ishmael, or where the boar opened up and just everyone just turned evil. And like, no, this stuff was just there kind of waiting for it. And I think people just were looking at things through like rose colored glasses and chose to ignore that, you know, there were people who, I guess, like we talk about Agenor would just create a plague just to see if he could, you know, that sort of a thing.
Yeah. What's interesting to me about that whole concept is that you have the end of the first age happen similarly because of their arrogance, was what that Jordan said. And the same kind of thing here, right? You can tell that, you know, Luthien was pretty arrogant. You know, he was, and I think they all kind of got there and kind of lost sight of what it was they had. And then it's similar to when the boar happened, similar to me, what happens with Mordeth and the evil. That evil, which it just kind of accentuates the, you know, what's already there, right? It's, and in some ways, like Agenor, what was already there, the Dark One's touch on the world just kind of accentuated it.
Yeah. And I totally forgot to get into this. And I'm sure people are really upset about this, but I didn't talk about Jokars. So, because everybody loves Jokars. Just because they're named Jokars.
I think you just love Jokars.
I love Jokars because they're called Jokars. Yeah, I forgot to talk about the transportation, right? There were large multi-passenger vehicles which use anti-gravity technology. And then the smaller four-wheel design Jokars, jumpers, hoverflies, all that awesome stuff. I can't forget the long-range transports, which were called show wings, which were used for overseas travel. They had a delta wing pattern. Jordan really got into a little specific about some of this stuff. So, and then gateways and skimming were also another means that the Aes Sedai travel. And then portal stones. So we kind of touched on this a little bit. And prior to when we actually started recording, portal stones were not created in the Age of Legends. They're supposedly a remnant. And I guess they're a remnant from the first age. They don't say specifically, but they were not created in the Age of Legends. They were created before. So I guess that has to be the first age because there's no other ages before that.
There's the seventh
age. The seventh age.
Well, yeah, I would say probably the first age. And I would say maybe the One Power wasn't the only thing that could have powered them. My guess is it could have been powered by other things. Those are the numbers of chaos. If it happened from the first age and we know that the channeling wasn't discovered until the end of the first age, then it has to have been, you know, created by in some other or with some other power source, I would imagine. So the portal stones are really unique. I wanted Jordan to always say the portal stones were just kind of part of what the wheel set up for the first age, but he did say that they were created and, you know,
so
I can't remember if he said by humans or not, or kind of left that open. But
so the Ogier know about portal stones. So the Ogier were around in the Age of Legends. Does this mean, I don't know if the Ogier know about portal stones because of the Age of Legends they were around and they studied them, or because the Ogier were around when portal stones were created. Or, you know, there's also the theories, right, that the Ogier were from mirror worlds, from the portal stones.
Yeah, I mean, Ogier are definitely from a parallel world, for sure. So, and I like how Malkier Talks just said in chat that the Ogier spaceships.
Yes, we've talked about that before. Yes,
this came up in Looney Theories. But yeah, the Ogier are definitely from parallel dimensions, or a parallel dimension. And so whether or not how they kind of came here, the Book of Translation or whatever that means, and was that the only way, and, you know, could you get there, you know, using other means? That's, Jordan wasn't as specific as we would all have liked him to have been, but yeah, I love the, I love the Looney spaceship theory. It's one of my favorites.
Steading are spaceships. That's all they are. That's right. For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, go check out our Ogier and Steading episode. We talked about it a little bit in there, I think. Or watch Matt's Looney Theory panel for Jordan Conline.
I'll give you a little funny note that what do you think was the root of the Ogier that Jordan created? Like, where did they come from? What was the base idea that eventually gave us the Ogier? What would you say?
Well, we know there was an Ogier street that was near where he lived. We don't know that much.
I don't know. So, is a strong word. I didn't know that, but okay.
Yeah, I didn't.
Yeah, we talked about it in our Ogier episode.
I must have been drinking during that part.
We did get a little crazy on that one, but yeah, there was an Ogier street or Ogier street that near where he lived, or where he grew up.
Would you believe that that his original idea from them was more like Lord of the Rings dwarves?
Really?
I would have said Ents.
Yeah. If anything, they're more like Ents.
So they were originally, in some of the stuff that he wrote, like shorter than humans that mined mountains. And yeah, and it's, again, he took a lot of these ideas and just kind of morphed them. And what he came up with, I prefer that instead of just his version of kind of a Lord of the Ring, you know,
dwarves.
Yeah. So, yeah, no.
But yes, he modified some ideas there. But yeah, one of the first ways he spelled it was Ogyr at first. But yeah, he some of those kind of funky little things that he originally thought, and almost every single time I've ever seen something he originally kind of had an original idea, I've always liked what he's finally come up with much more than, you know, where it came from.
Yeah, it sounds like he thought things through. He would jot down a note and then mull it over for a while and then come to his senses.
By the way, I said dwarves. I'm not saying that's what he wrote. He didn't write the word dwarf, but he definitely described all the kind of cliche things from Lord of the Rings, like, mm-hmm. You know, all the tropes of from the size of, and from, you know, their, what they like to do and where they resided and stuff like that at first. And then you can tell he just kind of iterated over the ideas and didn't like them and changed them and modified them when we got the Ogier. So
he's probably so embarrassed that we're all reading these old notes that he had, like, it's like, oh, God.
they're fascinating. They're fascinating. It's fun to know. It's fun to know kind of some of the things that came from, like some of the original Forsaken names, like Moloch and Daoth.
That's a little too much.
Day off. Yes.
Is it Moloch a name in Watchmen?
Yeah.
One of the bad guys in Watchmen.
Yeah.
Maleficent. You know.
Really?
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Was that going to be Lanfear's name, Matt?
Exactly.
Evil.
No, actually. What's funny is that, like, Ishamael, Lanfear, Agenor, and Balthamel were at the top of the list that I saw, and those all stayed the same. And then there were so many that just kind of like were different than Samael and Ravine, however you pronounce his name. I didn't see anything that came before those, but then all the ones in between kind of seemed like he was playing with some names. Just kind of fun stuff like that.
You're going to be doing a Robert Jordan's note episode soon, right?
Yeah. We're going to do one talking all about the Dragon Reborn and ideas that he had before he wrote that book. It's fascinating. Just
wow. I'm actually really, that's very exciting. I'm very curious about that. That's the book where I feel like, and I don't know, you know, obviously I have no idea what was inside of his head, but I feel like when he started writing the books and when he got to that book, like there were two different ideas for like what the scope of this was going to be. So I'm really curious as like what his notes were leading into writing The Dragon Reborn. That's cool.
Yeah, you could almost feel like he could have ended. Well, he could have ended the series there if he really wanted to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, if you go back and look at his notes, so I know it seems weird that I'm jumping to The Dragon Reborn because the stuff that he came up with for The Great Hunt is like nuts. Crazy. I mean, I think fans would find it just crazy, but we're way off topic there. But yeah, I it's gonna be fun. I guess we can go way off topic here because you can cut this later, Joe.
This is gonna be our longest episode. We've talked about everything about the Age of Legends that I wanted to talk about, so that's why I'm fine with whatever else we were talking about. So
yeah, so we'll do one about The Great Hunt and ideas that he had, but I just thought The Dragon Reborn, it has enough context where you're like, okay, we got them here. Now what do we do with them? And it's fascinating what he thought about that.
Oh, wow. When is that episode?
It's in a week and a half. So it's on the 24th, I think.
Oh, okay. Oh, we have to wait a while for that.
Yep. Yep. Just about 2 weeks.
Oh, that's my daughter's birthday.
Oh, you'll have to catch her then. You know.
No, that's okay. She'll be asleep by the time you come on. She's gonna be seven, so she should be sleeping
seven
by then, but she'll
oh my
at least
God.
Be in bed.
She can deal with it. Here, I'll give you a fun one from I guess relative to the Age of Legends. The name of Songreal and Angreal and what eventually became Terangreal, I think Terangreal was his last innovation there. Those used to Songreal and Angreal used to be called Kreese.
What?
Yeah. He used the powerful Kreese. Yeah.
No. Kreese.
It's funny to read those things. You're like, I love Songreal. And then Angreal, I think, was first. And then Songreal and Angreal. And then Terangreal came last, from what I could tell.
So. Isn't Kreese one of the bad guys in one of the Karate Kid movies?
He's the bad sensei, yeah. I don't know how it's
spelled. Is it the first movie?
Yeah, he's the bad sensei. Yeah.
Sweep the leg.
That's Kreese.
No mercy. Yeah,
maybe he was a big Karate Kid fan.
Oh my God.
Okay, I'll give you a couple more.
Go ahead. Give us some more for me.
Instead of Shaitan, it was Shatan.
Okay.
That's he eventually okay. changed that one. And do you know what Luz Theron's name used to be?
Oh.
So, yeah, his name in some of the earlier things that Robert Jordan wrote was Jared.
Like from Subway?
not that Jared. Gerard. I don't know how would you pronounce this?
Gerard? No,
Gerard. Jarrod.
Jarrod.
He didn't have a pronunciation.
No, not good.
Yeah.
From Subway. I'm sorry. That's...
Maybe Jarrod. That's why he changed yeah. the... No, well,
yeah,
that
he was like, oh, I can't use his name now. No, that Jared wasn't close to being bad when Luz Theron came
He wasn't
out.
A child molester at that
no,
point.
No, not yet.
He probably didn't even exist at that point. God. Right, Jared? Yeah, he wasn't around in 1990,
no,
Jared.
No, he's...
We shouldn't even be talking about this.
Yeah, this part,
those
that
are some
you,
of the fun.
That one you might cut.
That's going to be our audiogram this week.
Yes.
So I tried to go pick some up. I tried to... There wasn't like some like Age of Legends file. I just had to kind of read through some things that were kind of interesting about that he said about things that happened during the Age of Legends. And so, yeah, I thought Luz Theron having... I think it was Jarrod Telamon was the original. One of the originals. I don't know if that was his original. You know, things changed. Like, that's the most fascinating part of the notes is how much changed and how much he just kind of augmented and added. And it's fascinating. But nothing... I was hoping for some, like, really cool Age of Legends stuff. But you got some names. There you go.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
Sure.
This is some, exclusive Age of Legends material from Robert Jordan. So,
yeah, I think some of these things, JordanCon, we've kind of talked about it. I just know a lot of people haven't seen some of those panels before. So we've done like his notes panels a couple times. And that was one of the ones that everyone likes is this name change. And then the name of the Forsaken.
So I'm sorry, I have to stop here. Shetsune put in Discord, Luz Theron Telamon obviously developed from the Jerry Lewis telethon. Oh, man.
Everyone's having fun with that one.
I'll leave everybody on that note right there.
So, We don't get to Lanfear or any of that stuff, but
I'm sorry, Matt.
I know. It's okay. It's okay.
We'll do, it's fine. We're going to do, well, we will talk about Landfear probably in our next episode. We are going to, eventually at some point we will do a Landfear episode, and I promise we will invite you back for that episode.
Thanks. I can make my case that the entire Wheel of Time is about Landfear.
You're right. Yeah. Oh, man. All right. So, oh, wow. That was a good episode. Oh, my God. I'm a little winded from this.
Spent. You sound spent, man. Yeah.
I sound spent. I'm sorry. Chansonnet's thing just made me lose it. I'm sorry. Jerry Lewis Telethon. Yeah, she broke me. She broke me, too. I need a second here to gather myself. Okay.
It's like we came to the end of the Age of Legends.
Yeah,
we've arrived. We're coming towards the end. We're not at the end, but we're close to the end, and that's where we're going to pick it back up in our next part of the series. Although that's not going to be next week's episode.
Nope.
Ta-da-da. So our surprise announcement for next week's episode. So Jen, Tom, and I had the great fortune of being able to have a conversation with one of the actors from the upcoming Wheel of Time TV series.
Nice.
So next week's episode will be an interview, and it's not live. I'm sorry, everyone. We've already had this interview. But it will be a next episode. We had the opportunity to speak with the actress who is playing none other than Liana Jennifer Cheong Garcia. Yeah. So that will nice. Be that's yeah. yes
that's amazing.
It was really
yeah.
cool.
Thanks to Jen here. So Jen, you're awesome for getting us the ability to do that.
No problem.
Yeah, so we got the opportunity to get on a Zoom call with her, and we got a nice interview with her. So that's going to be in our next episode. So that is our big announcement.
Yeah.
Sweet, yes. That's huge. That's yeah. amazing, guys.
We were totally giddy and on the whole entire Zoom call.
It was very professionally done.
I likened it to that Jonah Hill meme.
Yeah.
Or GIF. That Jonah Hill GIF where he's like shaking his hands excited. That's how we were the entire interview. So,
but the interview itself is really good. Yeah, someone was posing it. The interview itself is really good. I think there's a lot of good stuff out of it. She was a terrific person to do it with. So yeah, pretty excited. I think you guys will like it a lot.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It was pretty amazing. She's awesome, by the way.
Yes.
But you'll get to hear that on next week's episode. So that's that would be on the episode released on the 22nd of June. So for those of you who are listening to this live, that's over 2 weeks from now. Those of you who are listening to the released podcast version, that'll be, a week from the day this episode's released. So that is our big announcement. So look forward to that. Matt, I want to thank you for coming on. You were an awesome guest. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Check him out on the Dusty Wheel on Wednesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on YouTube. I'm going to put the link in the show notes. If you don't know where it is, you probably got your head stuck in a hole somewhere. But check it out.
That's nice.
You can catch us on Sunday these next 2 weeks also. Sunday at like 4 p.m. Eastern. We'll be having a show too.
Yeah, he's out. Like Matt's putting out episodes all over the place. I don't know how you do this, Matt. You're crazy. My wife would strangle me if I did what you were doing. And I don't know. God bless Terry.
Seriously, right? Right. That's the phrase. God bless Terry.
So this is going to be coming out on Monday. So your upcoming Sunday episode is obsolete for people who are listening to the actual podcast version.
But the following Sunday, you can find
what's coming out. What's coming out next Wednesday? On the 17th.
Oh, sorry. Doing? That's we're talking all about the Black Tower and how it should be adapted for the TV series. And we're having the Black Tower podcast with us.
Awesome.
All three of them are going to be with me and basically just breaking down like, what do we think sucks about how the Black Tower is portrayed in the books? What do we think is great? What do you think we can be improved, changed, and, how will it make good television? What has to be there? Everyone says Dumais, well, of course, you have to have that. But
of course.
But what about the Black Tower itself? How do you give it its prominence it deserves? Because I'll be honest, it doesn't get that in the books. So
you're right. Yeah, you're right about that. Well, you know what? I'm not going to get into it now, but I think that's like, well, I'm going to say something about it because I have to. right? Because it's almost like Jordan is Rand in that perspective, where Rand neglects the Black Tower just like Jordan does.
Exactly.
Right. So that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my quick take on that. All right. So check Matt out on the Dusty Wheel. I'm going to put the link in the show notes to his YouTube channel. It's a very awesome, unique experience because it's a live call-in talk show on YouTube, so you can call in to the show and, you know, speak to him and the guests and ask questions. It's really fun. So check that out. Thanks again, Matt, for coming. Check out all our information in the show notes, our social media, Discord, and leave us a rate and review us on wherever you listen to podcasts. We really appreciate it. That's the best way you can support us, is to rate us and review us. And am I missing anything else? Jen, I know you got something. You're working on something, Jen. Go ahead.
I do. I have my next Wheel of Time parody. I think for the people listening live, I'm going to release it tomorrow at some point, probably in the morning. For those of you who are not listening live, check our Twitter because I'll probably have released it sometime this past Saturday.
Okay. And I'll put the link to that.
Yeah. It's pretty much done. It just has to be finalized tonight. I think it's going up. So.
All right. I'll put that link in the show notes too. And this is your Black Aja parody, right?
Yes. It's based on our show that we did last week. Well, I won't give anything away, but it's based on a Black Aja episode from last week.
Awesome. And also, don't forget to check out Tom on Audio Dungeon on Wednesdays at 8:30 Eastern Time on YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook. Go for Facebook. I know you, Matt, you and Tom are conflicting times here, but you can watch either of them after the fact. So, you know, if you want to watch one live and the other one later on, you can always do that. So don't forget to check that out as well.
Watch Matt live. He's a call-in show. You can watch us later. It's okay.
But your show is very interactive too, though, Tom.
It is, but we do a lot of stuff to try and keep it interactive over the course of the week. So you can catch us on a later time and still get to interact with the cast and crew. It's a fun show if you like Dungeons and Dragons or dramatic and comedic storytelling. It's a good time.
Yes, it's very fun and entertaining and hysterical and enjoyable and interactive too, which is the great. I think that's the best part about it. It's very interactive. So you're not just sitting there watching them do something. You get to interact with them. You get to alter the events of the story, which is really cool and unique and very entertaining and makes it very engaging. So check that out also. I think I've hit everything. So thanks everyone for listening, and you'll hear us next time.